Hello.
Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, I want to start with something that we haven't been doing as much lately when it comes to Saudi Arabia events, but I sort of feel we need to check WWE about how enthusiastically frequently they are mentioning Saudi Arabia without shame or guilt, including especially the closing reference to whether Cody or Damian is going to whether Damian at the hands of Cody is going to face a Saudi Arabian nightmare. I just don't think WWE should get that comfortable and with taking this kind of blood money from this regime. And I know the Middle East is complicated, and I know they have their argument for the more we do business with them, the more influence we'll have in the long run. I know all of that, but they wouldn't be doing it if the money wasn't off the charts, out of proportion, crazy money relative to what they usually make for shows in different countries. So I'm throwing that out there because what's a Saudi Arabian nightmare is somebody being sentenced to death for criticizing the regime that runs Saudi Arabia. And that's actually happened. No, that's like there's been headlines about that a human rights group is saying that a man has been sentenced to death for being critical of Saudi Arabia on social media. That's a Saudi Arabian nightmare. Let's not cheapen what that phrase conjures up for people to read the news and know what's going on in that country. Start talking about Crown Jewel again. Stop being quite so proud and bold about the people you're doing business with who, again, you're not going there because the fans are paying big ticket money. You're going there because they're getting paid a ridiculous amount of money to help as a PR, help in public relations for Saudi Arabia to seem more mainstream than they actually are, despite the progress that they tout that they're making. Jeff, this was a big thing 5 years ago. It's coming up in our best of shows. Did that strike you at all? Because I sort of felt myself getting a little too lax about this whole thing. And I do think we shouldn't let, just because a year went by since we thought about how bad that place has been, that we should just be okay with WWE being a lot more open about talking about it.
I agree. I do think they are a lot more emboldened than they were a couple of years ago. There was a time when they first started running these shows where they wouldn't even mention that they were going to be in Saudi Arabia.
And they put the logo up and fans would boo.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And they were made very aware their fan base knew this was not something the fans are proud of.
And they were wearing it proudly tonight. I even got the impression when they started talking about their other international PLEs coming up that they were just kind of, blending this one in with it. We're going to be in Australia. We're going to be in Germany. Oh, by the way, we're going to be in Saudi Arabia, it doesn't seem like the sort of thing that they really care to tread lightly with right now. And I think you're right too. There was a time when they first started running these shows, just as a rule, I personally did not watch them. And maybe I fell away from that a little bit with, the most recent one they had was with the Bloodline storyline and the Usos broke away from Roman Reigns. And I wanted to see that. And so, I pulled it up while that was happening and I did watch that. And it was something I thought about a little less heading into this one until during the show tonight. And I started thinking again, this isn't the sort of show I think I'm going to watch. And it's a bummer. I do think there's going to be a lot of good stuff on the show, and I look forward to reading the recaps of it.
Yeah.
But I think I'm back to sitting these out again, and I think part of it probably does have to do with how brazen they are with this approach again.
Yeah, Human Rights Watch, HRW.org, Human Rights Watch had a article up a couple months ago where they quoted Joey Shea, a Saudi Arabian researcher at Human Rights Watch, who said repression in Saudi Arabia has reached a terrifying new stage when a court can hand down a death penalty for nothing more than peaceful tweets. Saudi authorities have escalated their campaign against all dissent to mind-boggling levels and should reject this travesty of justice. And they talked about how he was arrested in front of his wife and children last year outside his home after being critical, and just it was retweets, YouTube activity, and Twitter posts, Twitter X posts. So, and there's a lot more. That's the main one that I remember seeing come through my news feed and just shaking my head at and going, the countries can there's going to be cultural differences in terms of women's dress, for instance, you know, how, or, you know, where it's like, ah, it feels behind, but we haven't been a perfect country either in a lot of ways. I mean, just watch a 1970s game show. I mean, we've come a long way in 50 years, you know, in terms of how we talk about women. But that's not to diminish, and obviously go back a couple hundred years and, you know, it's way worse. So I understand countries progress at different rates, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't stand up for a corporation trying to normalize what is still horrendous. What was the phrase? Mind-boggling levels of a campaign against dissent, including peaceful dissent. So I should have to apologize. I say we're not going to belabor the point. I just want to lead with that and then kind of move on because it is what it is. I've said what I want to say about it, and I missed the days when fans booed the Crown Jewel logo, and I think WWE would be wise to, as you said, they seem like they feel emboldened right now, or maybe Saudi Arabia is saying, hey, we've had a lot of money, start mentioning our country more.
Right.
I don't know the details of their relationship. Whatever it is, if people push back, WWE is going to get the message, and then they might also, you know, check themselves. Yeah.
And I know they have been working more to present the arena there for these shows as just another arena. You know, when they first started running these, the setting was a lot different. You know, you could see people sitting at tables behind the ring from across from the hard camera. And I know at least for the last show, if you didn't know where they were, you could have thought they were in South Carolina.
Yep.
You know, so I think that's part of the, I don't know if you want to call it whitewashing, but part of what they're doing, you know, to make people forget that this isn't exactly right.
And I want to underline, they're not going there to entertain the citizens, the people. That's the argument. Well, we're not trying to change the world. We're just trying to entertain people who are into it. I feel, obviously, I mean, you watch the crowds now, and there are people into the WWE product, I think more now than when they first started going there 5 years ago. And that's great. They bring smiles to people's faces, that they do charity work, mm-hmm. that they have women who are role models to empower other women. I think there's no question WWE being in Saudi Arabia does some good. But it is out of – but WWE isn't going there to do good. They're not going there to change the world. And they're not going there to make money from a fan base that will pay to support them. They're going there because Saudi Arabia is paying them an out-of-proportion amount of money to have a guaranteed sold show that then they can use as propaganda to make it seem like their country is okay with corporate America, companies that you like and trust. So we must not be that bad anyway. That's why they're going there. That's the genesis of going to Saudi Arabia. They don't go to a lot of countries who don't pay them, who don't have huge fan bases. They went there because of that big guaranteed payment. So when people go, oh, but look, it's for the fans. It's like, but that's not why they're there. And don't be a mark. Don't be a fool. Understand they are not there because there's WWE fans there. There's WWE fans in a lot of countries WWE doesn't go to. They're going there because they're being paid an out-of-proportion amount of money to be used to whitewash that regime.
And is it possible the change in tone just, you know, relatively recently has anything to do with TKO now?
I don't think so because Ari Emanuel actually sent money back to Saudi Arabia after the Jamal Khashoggi killing. And there's hope that when this, you know, deal is up, or perhaps sooner, that he'll try to get out of it. Now, I haven't heard him say anything publicly since then. But I actually that's what – it's sort of surprising to me because I would actually think the new ownership, because of Ari Emanuel's past actions and words, would make it seem like they would be just more – not timid. Guarded in their enthusiasm, expressing enthusiasm for going there. Or, like I said, Michael Cole's flippant statement is kind of what set me off. You know, it's going to be a Saudi Arabia nightmare. It's like when he said that, it's like, oh, it's a nice play on words, but there's a lot of nightmares in Saudi Arabia that phrase should not be used.
Right.
You know, in that way. It just feels too flippant.
Right. I agree.
Right. Yeah. Cool. All right. So let's pause. Let's introduce ourselves and then flip to talking about tonight's Raw and hype for Crown Jewel. We are going to talk about it. It is newsworthy. It's my job to cover it. It's also part of my job to commentate on it. And Jeff and I have let our feelings be known about that, but we will get to the content of Raw and talk about the show that some will watch and some will just read about. And I will be covering it Saturday. It's my job to cover it, but I will do so in the context of also, as I have done on past shows, publicizing headlines that, you know, maybe will shame WWE into being less proud, seemingly proud of going there. And that kind of thing can all, you know, build up and let Saudi Arabia know we're not just all pushovers here. All right. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, October 30th, 2023. I'm Wade Keller, host of the show, the editor, publisher, and founder of Pro Wrestling Torch, the newsletter, and the website pwtorch.com, and the host of various podcasts, including the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows, Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcasts, and a variety of VIP shows. My guest co-host is Jeff Rush. He is a pwtorch.com contributor. Jeff, welcome back to the co-host chair.
Thanks. You know, Wade, I had a 50-50 shot of being the one to introduce this post show tonight. If you factor in the callers, I think each of our chances would have dropped to, what, 15%? So I'd like to congratulate you on overcoming the odds and doing the introduction.
I didn't know where you're going for a second there. And I like that. I like that. Poor Wade Barrett. Like, I would like to think every NFL team has an equal, you know, roughly 3% chance to win the Super Bowl every year. That's just not how it works.
Right.
Nobody asks. It's not 32 teams, so it's basically 3.1%, whatever that works out to. They need to give a math course. I'll volunteer. I'll give a math course. I'll explain statistics. I do it here. Just play this show. My God, it's so dumb. Thank you for bringing that up.
I knew it wasn't anything that would be lost on you, for sure.
Oh, no, for sure. Yeah, you know me. All right. Tell people about your new series, your new article series called Rocket Straps on pwtorch.com. And people can check it out in the opinion and analysis section if they want to go to the menu. If it's not, you know, recently published because it's a once a week article, you can always find the previous ones and the most recent one in the opinion and analysis section.
Yeah, sure. Each week I go through and analyze both SmackDown and Raw in that order and apply various metrics to the way each wrestler on the show is featured, who opens the show, who main events, who receives lengthy in-ring promo time, who kicks off top-of-the-hour segments. From there, I study the quarter-hour ratings, look at who appeared in the highest-rated segments, and on down from there. Take a few other things into consideration, like estimated merchandise sales, how wrestlers are featured in the show previews, who got wins, who's holding gold. I take all that into consideration to determine the top 10 wrestlers WWE appears to be prioritizing the most each week. And we're a few months into this practice. It's been fascinating. Beyond the priority top 10, which is what I call it, I also run separate top 10s for both SmackDown and Raw, which for me are the most revealing aspect of what I'm doing. Those are where you start to see the Bronson Reeds, the Tegan Knoxes start to enter the picture and not just Jey Uso, Cody yeah. Rhodes, Judgment Day. So yeah, it's a lot of fun putting together each week, and I hope Torch readers are enjoying it as well.
Very good. Well, I want to give out the phone number if you want to join us. If you're live streaming our show and not watching the end of Monday Night Football, or if you're doing both, feel invited to give us a call. The number is 347-215-8558. 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1 on your keypad. That'll flag you on the switchboard and let us know that you want to be on the show. You can also email us at wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. I want to let people know I'm coming down with cold. It happens like 2 out of 3 years after Halloween weekend. I dare to socialize around people who are sniffing and coughing and sneezing. I went to a Timberwolves game with Kelly Wells. Went to a Halloween party afterwards. I wore a mask, actually, when I was walking around the concourse and stuff, but it's still, you know, I didn't at the party, and I didn't 100% of the time when sitting in my seat. So I was trying to avoid catching something, but I am. So I'm doing well because a couple Advil have kicked in. I like took it early and raw, but I don't want to blow my voice out because I can definitely tell my throat's just not at 100%. So I'm going to lean on Jeff a little bit more, and we might not go as long with the show. So if you do want to be part of it, call early in case I do start sensing I'm running out of energy or pushing my limits vocally. I'll say one more thing about Saudi Arabia, and then we'll talk about the show. I have come to a place where if WWE goes to Saudi Arabia and takes their money, I know a lot of people do that. And it's like, I'm not all up in arms about that. I mean, I have my opinions on it. My issue is when it starts to feel like they aren't just going there to make money, but they are sending propaganda back and, or just getting a little too loosey-goosey with the idea that this is just another place we go. So when they're more guarded and it's like, okay, they're a corporation, they're cashing in, it's shameful, but they're not alone. And there is some good that's happening when they go there. I'm more quiet about it. You know, it's like, okay, maybe ultimately some good can come of this. But if the regime doesn't get better or doesn't or still has these egregious things happening recently, and WWE doesn't seem to feel any self-awareness or just a sense of like toning things down, that's when I just start thinking it was the propaganda early touting, you know, what a great country it was, or Corey Graves, oh, the restaurants are so clean, you know, and the people are so friendly. It's like, that's not the point. Stop, you know, like just go there and do a show. That's my
right.
point. Don't start celebrating the country in the ways that they were. So I want to underline, it's like, I'm not saying like just perfectly okay with them going there. My issue though, when I really do kind of speak up and get worked up, is when it seems like it felt tonight that they're just getting a little too comfortable. So I feel like I made that point, but I wanted to underline that aspect of it. That's not like I'm going to rant every time they go there. It's how they framed it tonight that kind of got to me.
But you also mentioned feel-good moments, and the last time they were there was the first time Sami Zayn agreed to be part of the show, and that ended up being a really huge part of the show. They had a pretty big package where they were showing him going around and, you know, coming, you know, essentially back home is the way it was portrayed, and he embraced being there for the first time, and I'm not so sure. I don't think he's on the card again this time, obviously. But I know that there was that element of feel good that they were putting into the show last time around too.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. If anyone wants to talk about that, feel free. I'm not saying, you know, if you have an opinion like ours, different than ours, feel free to call and express it or email. That's why we do this format. We want to hear from other people, but we can talk about the rest of the show too, because this was very centered around forwarding key matches and storylines going into Saturday night. Let's begin with Ian in Tennessee, and then on deck will be Brad in Florida. Ian, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind about tonight's Raw?
Yeah, you know, you guys were talking about Saudi stuff, and, you know, it did kind of feel like they were kind of shoving it down our throats that, it, you know, this was in Saudi. And, you know, it brought back a memory. I think it was late 2018 when they had that tournament where Shane won, where a lot of superstars kind of like turned down going because of what was happening in Saudi. So kind of brought back that memory. And earlier, Jeff, Sami is on the card. He's on the kickoff with JD. But back to the show.
Okay.
What was y'all's opinion about the Gunther Miz segment? That segment stood out to me because it was so – I think it was really, really well done. What did you guys think of that segment?
Yeah, really from a newsworthy standpoint, or like what you would not have predicted going into Raw in terms of hyping just the matches, that was the thing that stood out the most. Jeff, I'll throw to you for your thoughts.
Yeah, I was really starting to feel bad for Miz after a minute there, which is not at all what I was expecting heading into that segment. And I'm just, does anyone respect him at this point? I mean, you've got the heels taking their turns punking him, and, you know, there's Drew McIntyre, who's kind of on the fence, but, you know, he doesn't like him. Of course, none of the baby faces do. It was really interesting. And then I thought maybe we're reaching a point where they're looking at turning him and making him an earnest baby face. Then he goes backstage and he's talking to Adam Pearce, and he's got the bug eyes, and he's, you know, being all obnoxious all over again. I was like, okay, well, he's obviously not going to be a baby face or anything like that. But I do like having them kind of mix it up a little, try something different with Miz. He's been in the same role for a very long time now, where he's kind of a poke the bear type character, and he always gets his in the end. And it was nice to see him thrown in a different role. And for a minute there, I thought we were actually looking at an impromptu six-man tag match with DIY coming out. And that had me concerned for a minute because, you know, the days of Johnny Gargano and The Miz together, not Gargano's finest moments. And he got away from that. He's getting back to DIY, and that's all well and good. So I'm glad that didn't happen. But, yeah, it just feels like they threw yet another name into the Intercontinental title scramble they've got going on there.
Do you think this is part of a Miz babyface turn, like laying the groundwork for it, or this is like more, you know, kind of what you're saying. This is Gunther just going after anyone and everyone, and, you know, it may or may not lead to Miz winning that four-way match next week.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I thought maybe for a minute that's where they were going, but as soon as he got backstage, he was the same obnoxious Miz. And I think maybe he just has that element to him that he's never truly going to be able to shake, that's going to allow people to full-on support him and cheer for him, other than in the way that I think a lot of people already do, which is, you know, people recognizing how long he's been around and how the work he's put in and respecting him from that perspective. But as far as an on-screen character goes, I can't see it. I thought I could for a minute there. I squinted during that segment. But
yes, I know what you mean.
Yeah, by the end now.
I was doing the same thing. Like, am I, like, feeling sympathy for Miz as he talks about, you know, his accomplishments, and is he underrated a little for what he's accomplished? Do people hold against him? And then he's like, I can be serious at times when I need to. You know, and Cole said, for all of Miz's faults, he's a very proud man. So you have the announcer sort of, you know, going, he's got faults, we're not forgetting that, but, you know, he had to stand up for himself there. I one of the highlights of the show was Miz ranting about never being more humiliated and disrespected than that, and Pierce goes, are you sure about that? And his delivery was great on that one. So to me, that's like the humor you look for is, you know, when it's, you know, like pumpkins being, you know, smashed or people being powerbombed onto candy, which we got a double dose of again. Collision and Raw. I will say for the record, I think I'd rather get powerbombed onto taffy and gummy bears on Collision than, you know, basically candy LIGOs with those corn, what are they called? Candy corn.
Wade Barrett's nobody likes candy corn. You know, you're speaking the truth at least, Wade Barrett. My fear all night long heading into this show was Food Fight, and we almost got away without having one. I think the pie during the Trick or Street Fight match checked that box, unfortunately, and the ghost of Vince lives on. But
it's all worth it, though, to see Chelsea and Niven dressed up as Heart Foundation. I love that. Was so great.
That was Piper Niven particularly was the highlight of the show for me. And I was, you know, I was thinking, like, I wonder if maybe she'll go the John Cena route. You know, he came out and did the rapper gimmick as, you know, for laughs during the Halloween episode of SmackDown back in, what, 2002? And it just stuck with him. It was part of his persona for years. I'm like, you know, we can have that with Piper Niven. Let's just let her be the anvil for a while because she was really fantastic in that role.
Yes, I want to circle back and just say Gunther is amazing right now. Like, I mean, he's one of the best, most authentic, believable. He's like, you know, Samoa Joe has been, you know, but like actually with a push in his prime on national TV in front of huge crowds. Like, I see Gunther, and it's like, again, there's it's what Joe could have been in the right hands at the right time in the right context. Just amazing, and he showed range. There's just this dismissive arrogance towards Miz that you're sympathetic to, but he laid it on so thick, you end up actually sympathetic to Miz. I just thought Gunther was great. And the whole Imperium thing. I mean, I think we talk about Judgment Day a lot. Imperium are not as frequently on television. I was going to say overexposed, but that sounds judgmental because I actually think I'm kind of okay with how often Judgment Day show up on TV, but some think they're overdoing it, and I get that. Imperium are not overexposed, are not exposed as much, and so they stay fresher. But the whole thing, I think, is really good. And, you know, Miz dishing on Vinci, or, you know, calling out Vinci for, like, oh, he speaks, and trying to cause problems with Kaiser. Are you sure it's okay? Did you give him permission? I just thought that thing was well done. Ian, you asked about it. I want to hear what you thought.
No, I think it was a really good, you know, like, hey, Miz is, you know, he kind of reminds me, you know, him and Dolph Ziggler were, like, in my opinion, the two most underrated superstars, and, you know, Ziggler goes and gets released. But, you know, I think this is, like, Triple H giving us Miz being like, hey, you know, we still have Miz. Miz can, you know, he's still very good, you know. And, you know, I think it was Wade or Michael Colson, you know, Miz is, you know, two-time Grand Slam champion. And, you know, putting him in a feud with Imperium, you know, it's like you said, Wade, we don't know if he's going to win the Fatal 4-Way. I honestly wouldn't be shocked if he wins, and this is, you know, probably giving him one last title reign before he retains, because I don't know if it was just me, but they kept mentioning First Bell Hall of Fame to Miz. I don't know if maybe that's like an indication Miz is, you know, slowing down or he's not going to be around as much. Did that stick out to you guys a little bit too?
I didn't get any kind of impression that he might be on his way out. I suppose that's definitely possible. To me, it felt like I want to say, I don't want to say filler. Filler sounds a little, you know, mean-spirited, but it didn't, it felt like they were just coming up with an angle to get through the show on the lead up to the next PLE, and then who knows, you know, where we go from there. But I didn't get any kind of impression that he's getting primed for one last big run or anything like that. I wouldn't mind that. I just didn't see that.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to read into this. I don't want to go too far. Yeah, I'm not sure what they were implying for us and what we should infer from what we saw tonight. It might have just been, hey, we can have an entertaining way to set up a four-way, or it could be a slow and careful path towards trying to get Miz in a babyface role to, you know, be opposite of Grayson and Theory at some point or something like that. I'm just not quite sure. It'll be a bit of a challenge. But, you know, Miz is a guy's been around so long. I mean, people are cheering Cena now, and, you know, they grew up booing him. So, or they grew up cheering him, and now they're old enough to keep cheering him because all the people who booed him are watching AEW. Who knows? I mean, it's been long enough. So crowds change, and Miz is, you know, put in his time. So who knows?
Absolutely.
Ian, anything else on that or anything else you want to add?
Well, yeah, to me, I think it was, you know, kind of testing the water, saying, like, you know, we could turn his face, and, you know, and then, you know, backstage, he, you know, he leans to Pierce and didn't he lose his opportunity? But, you know, to me, what I think they could do is, you know, have Miz win the belt, maybe on, like, a roll-up and be like, oh, Miz didn't beat him clean. You know, he beat him with a roll-up, and that elevates Gunther to main event status. You know, maybe he wins the Rumble, has, like, a world title feud with Seth or Drew winning, and that leads me into Drew. His promo, to me, was phenomenal, but I think Seth's response was kind of well done in a way, you know, going back to the time era that we don't talk about, the Thunderdome era. What did you guys think of Seth's promo and in response to Drew's?
Yeah, that's actually one of the real interesting talking points from Raw tonight is how that went down. You know, Drew just keeps speaking the truth. Michael Cole keeps saying what he says is true. They aired footage of it. You know, I don't think Vince McMahon would have wanted it or Kevin Dunn would have wanted it if they showed the Performance Center. It's so suit the storyline to do that. Levesque's not running from it. It is a part. It's part of the Drew McIntyre story. And then Seth's comeback is, I think, what some people feel. Which is, yeah, we get it. Stop whining, and people had it harder than you. But I didn't. To me, I was on Team Drew on this. I thought Seth was snotty and needlessly snotty in his tone, rather than just making the point. I don't think you have to go, man, man, yeah, like that. When Drew is just earnestly stating what he went through. Drew's job is being a pro wrestler. He's famous, and he's the peak moment of his career was at the Performance Center. He's not saying I had it worse than anybody. What he's saying is, in my career, my dream moment, my peak moment, ended up being disappointing because of the context. So I think people think what Drew is saying is fair and not whiny. And I'm sorry, if you're in a world title match and someone interferes and costs it, you're not whining by pointing out you didn't lose clean. You know, I mean, that's like, that's not dwelling on it. He hasn't dwelled on it. He is bringing it up more recently because he's got another title shot. So the context of his previous title shots is relevant. So I thought it was risky but interesting. You know, people like Seth. They like singing a song, but I don't think people – I don't know. It'd be an interesting poll. Like, are you team Seth or Team Drew in terms of how the story's going? How'd you feel watching it, Jeff? And did you think they were, you know, maybe playing with fire a little bit when it comes to Seth being kind of talking in that tone and just being pretty hard on Drew?
Yeah, we talked a lot about Drew last time I was on a month ago or so, and I at that point I said the same thing I'm going to say now, which is, you know, for me, in my opinion, the best heels are always the one who believe that they are acting as a babyface, and that's exactly where Drew is at. It's where he's been, and it's like you said, there's he's not fabricating anything. He's telling the truth of where he came from and why he feels the way he did. And yet he ends up being positioned as the heel. I think where we have to be going with this is they're clearly going to – they're establishing Drew as a heel. It's just we're taking a nice slow road to get there. I don't see a way where we come out of this and everyone goes, oh, you know what? Drew was right all along. You know, he actually is a great guy, and, you know, let's move on. He's the top babyface of the brand now. We're not – obviously we're not heading in that direction. So the other way to go, I guess, is either to continue having him in this kind of in-between role or to have him go full-on heel. And I didn't think prior to tonight that him being a part of Judgment Day in the near future was, you know, a very big possibility. This show made me think more about that as a likelihood going forward, especially with all the dissension that they're again planning with Judgment Day and Damian Priest. But they got more specific with it, it seemed, tonight. By the end of the show, they're, you know, they Cody is calling out, you know, his inability to be a leader, and, you know, there's no leaders, but Rhea Ripley is clearly calling all the shots. Like, that's more poking than anyone has done with Judgment Day and all the strife they've had, the inner turmoil they've had. So I think we're finally starting to see the way out for Damian, and I think with that likely comes the way in for Drew. And I think that would be good. I think, you know, maybe at that point the Judgment Day says, okay, we do have a leader. Our leader is Drew McIntyre, and everybody's fine with that. And that's where JD McDonough finally gets on board. And I think we could have a really fun faction then too. My only concern then, of course, would be what happens with Damian Priest, because, you know, nobody can forget his actions and where he came from, as we've learned with Jey Uso.
Yeah.
And if they do right away, then what are we doing? You know, everybody is just kind of a hypocrite then.
There's a time where it seemed like Priest was being more stand-up, and then, you know, what he did to Cody and laughing about it a week later, it just feels like, how do you cheer this guy anytime soon? But, you know, maybe they got something in mind. I mean, I assume they have an end game and they work backwards, and, you know, they have a way that they think they can make it work if that's the direction they're going with it. And it sure seems like a distinct possibility.
I will say I, for one, am ready to move on from all these factions with gripes and inner turmoil. Like, we get so much of it right now. Mm-hmm. And for as much as I really do enjoy so much of the writing that's been behind all the programming on WWE the last several months, it's the one thing that's starting to annoy me a little bit more. I know you said earlier that Imperium and Gunther are so strong. And it's true. Gunther especially is very strong. With Imperium, I don't know. Not every group needs to have dissension when it's gone on for as long as it has with them. I'm just feeling like, let's do something here. Let's, you know, they're more fun for me to watch as a dominant, cohesive unit than they are where they're constantly, you know, coming at Giovanni for his failures. Like, how are we supposed to feel about Giovanni at this point? And I know the members of the group have spoken out about wanting to stick together. You know, they came up together and they all like each other, but I'm ready for them to, for all these factions to finally be on the same page for a good long run.
I think that's fair. You want baseline in pro wrestling in general. You know, every show should have like something that's baseline, a match that where, you know, like 3 out of 4 weeks, a heel should beat a baby face without a distraction. You know, like that should just be a thing as a baseline. You should have, you know, wrestlers who are your baseline baby face. They're not outlandish. They're just good wrestlers. And, you know, I don't know. I just think having that sort of not a control group and experience, you know, like in terms of scientific experiments, but sort of like that, just something that makes everything else stand out. If everybody's crazy, the whole thing just seems zany and crazy. But if you have some normal things going on, like that's why lead announcers are so important. Like, I think they have to be the voice of reason, and they need to have sort of a constitution to what we're here for. It's to find out who the best wrestler is, and they should be outraged and speak out against any match outcome that doesn't help resolve who the better wrestler is in the match because of outside interference. And so, there should be a faction that just sort of gets along. So right. It doesn't seem like the only reason for factions to exist is to tell the story of internal turmoil.
And I feel like maybe that's an example of the Paul Levesque regime, or however that's working behind the scenes. It's an example of them kind of finding their rhythm and getting their feet. They saw this work out so well with the Bloodline last year with Sami Zayn and everything that happened there. And now I think they're just putting a little touch of it into every faction, and we just don't need it in every single faction. So, and you mentioned having strong commentary lead the way too. Is it just me, or was Michael Cole like a little extra goofy tonight? Yeah, maybe it was the holiday spirit or something. Yeah. But
they had Halloween spiked Halloween punch. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, particularly
the Candice and Michelle thing. He just didn't let that go, and it's like, I didn't think it was that big of a deal, but it's And I don't think Cole did either. I think he just thought, oh, it's kind of fun to play into it. You know, it's not that big of a deal to, I mean, to take Candace into the wrong last name and go, oh, I meant this. But then he's like, yeah, getting old is awful, and yeah, you know, never live that down. And yeah, there was a little bit of a pun, a little bit of playfulness to him that isn't normal. But I don't know if it was so much that I think it's for sure something.
Yeah. No, I just think everybody was feeling a little goofy tonight or something. And I know things are a little looser with it. They don't have Vince in
right.
their ear constantly, so they get to go off script and have a little fun. And that's cool sometimes. I just, with that specifically, like you said, the Candace Michelle, Candace LeRae thing, I didn't even notice it at first. And like their banter about it.
I've probably
kind of
written Candace Michelle when I meant Candace LeRae, so I can't be too hard on Michael for that. I mean, I know the difference, but I mean, it is just easy to, you know, slip up and say that.
But he did it, and then there was a video montage, and then they came back and talked about it. Like, I think everybody forgot about it by the time that video package was over.
Right, yes. I feel like last week I was calling somebody by the wrong last name with the sort of first name. But anyway, Ian, before I go back to you, Ian brought up maybe Miz rolling up Gunther as sort of a way to not have Gunther lose in a decisive way to anybody, so he sort of, it's just a roll-up. It doesn't count. Is that the way for Gunther to lose this, or do you think Jeff Gunther's title reign should end by giving a rub to somebody else who beats him, or does that hurt him too much if you try to elevate Gunther after losing the IC title into a world title match if he just lost to someone who got a big win? Is it better to do kind of a roll-up with somebody like Miz so it doesn't really feel like it proved anything? It just got the secondary belt off of him.
Miz would be a really strange choice, in my opinion. I think, yes, you're at the point with his reign now where it ends either with him putting someone over strong or simply graduating to the next level and becoming a heavyweight title contender. I mean, obviously, he's headed in that direction at some point sooner than later. I guess it's just a matter of, will the story entirely be on Gunther when the day comes where he drops that title, or is it more about the person he's dropping it to? And they don't have a lot lined up. I know we have all these names in this IC title scramble that they're working on. And up until about 2 weeks ago, I was thinking maybe a long-term plan might be Bronson Reed. But they pushed that one really quickly, and it was a fun little match they had a couple weeks ago. I say little, like I'm demeaning it. I just mean it was a televised match. It was, you know, it was on Raw. It wasn't a pay-per-view match. But it had occurred to me he could be a possible eventual winner who gets kind of built up by beating Gunther. And I'm not sure I see that now, maybe in part because they did rush that, but I don't know if the person that he's going to be putting over is still there. They do seem to be continuing the Chad Gable storyline. Every two or three weeks, Chad Gable will mention something about it, so he hasn't forgotten about it. But I don't know. I think when you've invested as much as you have into Gunther, it only makes sense to use the passing of that baton to help someone else along the way. You can graduate Gunther to the next level regardless, but it'd be nice to see someone else made in the process.
Or they can do a triple threat match where Gunther's not involved in the finish.
That would really be the worst way for that to end, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It would be the flattest way.
Yeah.
But in a way I would like it because it would make a complete mockery of the ludicrousness of those rules. So the you know, like they get away with it because it's like, it's not that big of a deal. That'd be a really, really cheap way to end the longest reign of all time. So if it draws attention to rules that should be abolished, then I will sacrifice that for that purpose. Okay, Ian, back to you. Anything else you want to bring up?
Yeah, my final thing is Becky Lynch, you know, I'm not the biggest fan of her, and I will say I was very shocked that she lost the belt on NXT, I think it was last week. Where do you see them going with her? You know, she mentioned Rhea Ripley saying she defended the belt more than Rhea Ripley has this full year. Do you see her going after belts, or, I mean, what do you see them doing with her?
Yeah, that was interesting. You know, I mean, I was curious if they were going to have her talk about, you know, losing the NXT title or just have her, like, not be on TV for a couple of weeks and then just show up in some other way. I like that they followed up on it, and I thought she talked about it. She goes, it's what you say. She said something about, you know, losing doesn't defeat her. It inspires her. I don't know what – it was better than that. So it was good that it was addressed. But, yeah, you know, I thought it was kind of surprising they let her – talk about how infrequently Roman defends a title and Rhea defends a title, just because with, you know, they talk about the length of the title reign and they don't really introduce the, you know, title defense per X number of days ratio. That's pretty weak, you know, it's extremely weak with Roman. So yeah, I mean, it seems like they're setting up Becky and Ripley, and I think that's a good match. I mean, what'd you take from that, Jeff?
I don't think it was a throwaway line for sure. They had their face-to-face backstage last week or the week before. I think it was last week. And there was definitely some gravity behind that. I do think hopefully we're sticking with the slow build approach that WWE has been excelling at lately. And we could hold off on that match until WrestleMania. I think that would have, you know, night one main event energy to it. I think that's something they could do with that match. But I guess suppose they could always rush through it, get us to Survivor Series or, you know, December pay-per-view or whatever. But that's something they've clearly got their eye on in the future. And I'm all for it. I would love to see that match.
All right. Ian, anything else for us?
No, I'll let you guys get to the cars. It's always great talking to you guys.
Good. Yeah, good topic. Thanks, Ian.
Thanks, Ian.
Appreciate it. All right, our number 347-215-8558. Give us a call. When you call, push 1 if you want to be on the show. 347-215-8558. Or you can email us, wadekellerpodcast@pwtorch.com. All right, we'll go to Brad in Florida next. Brad, thanks for holding. What's your mind, Brad, about Raw tonight?
Hey, guys. I thought tonight was an excellent show. I'm sure that means, Wade, you probably didn't like it as much tonight as previous weeks, right? Because we're always on the opposite end of the page. Like, I feel like when I say I love a show, you're always like, eh, it was okay. And like when I'm like, I hated it, you're like, oh, it was really good tonight. You know? So did you think that this was not a great Raw?
No, I thought it was a good Raw. I think it was a great Raw. I'm not even sure I'd say it was a – well, this is the thing. We're always kind of grading shows on curves to a degree, whether we acknowledge it or not. And Raw's just been, to me, better lately. I mean, I don't remember a time where so often the 3 hours goes by where I don't feel like this. There was an hour of filler, or it's dragging, and it's too long to sit and watch wrestling live in real time. And this was a good show. You know, I enjoyed it. I'm enjoying the Raw product. I enjoy so many of the characters, you know, Dom and Rhea and Drew McIntyre and what Becky Lynch has been doing and on and on. I mean, it just, you know, raving about Gunther and Chelsea Green is entertaining. I like Adam Pearce's character. I mean, I just think I like a lot of the way that I like a lot of the characters on the show and the way that they're presented and framed. And I mean, there's things that are, you know, I mean, too many distraction finishes. It's just, you know, ridiculous. It doesn't ruin the show for me, but you know, it's like, come on. You know, I mean, just really, can't we do something else or whatever? So, I mean, there's things we threw out, but I thought it was a good show. I thought it was a good episode of Raw. I think it was, like, the most newsworthy thing ever, but it doesn't need to be if there's just some good wrestling and character. Like, the wrestling that I grew up with as a kid wasn't about, like, the AWA ran, like, 3 angles a year. You know, I mean, it was about seeing characters that I was invested in entertain me with entertaining promos and do cool moves and be bombastic on their way to the ring and accentuate their character and have good, tight, realistic fights for that, you know, in the context of athleticism of that era. And I enjoy wrestling when it's not trying to create social media buzz or be the show of the year or get this as awesome chance, as long as you have the right cast of talented people and characters you care about who are part of a structure where it seems like what they're doing kind of will matter, you know, that we're moving forward with multiple storylines. And I think they're hitting enough of a groove on Raw lately that it is in that category for me. So, yeah, but, you know, I mean, it wasn't blockbuster to me, but I have no issue with you, Brad, thinking this was a really good show. I mean, I can totally get that. And in a moment, you can elaborate on that more or steer it how you want. But I'll throw it to Jeff because I didn't ask what you thought overall of the show.
Yeah, for me, it was it was a little bit of an off night, and I've been enjoying it every bit as much as you have lately, Wade. For this night specifically, I think it being the go-home show before Crown Jewel mixed with the holiday theme, I feel like it was kind of a middle ground Raw. It was certainly a night of matches with mostly obvious outcomes. I mean, you knew DIY wasn't going to lose their re-debut. You knew JD wasn't going over – Seth Rollins, and with Cody and Priest facing off next weekend, there's no way Priest was going to take a clean loss either. All that said, I thought it was a mostly fun show. The holiday theme, again, kind of sucked a little bit out of things for me, but it definitely could have been worse.
But we got Piper Niven as Jim the Anvil. Like I said, it almost offsets any negative feelings I had about pumpkins and candy.
I know. It really did make up for a lot. I was really excited to hear you say that you enjoyed the show as much as you did, Brad. Can you tell us about that? I'd love to hear what you liked about it so much.
Yeah.
Brad, what's wrong with you?
And thanks, Jeff. Yeah. And, you know, I think I've been enjoying Raw recently a lot more, too. And you know what I think it is, guys? I think it's Michael Cole and Wade Barrett. Honestly, like, I couldn't put my finger on what it was. But I really think I figured it out tonight that it's just Michael Cole and Wade Barrett. And I think that them together, they are so good together. And I understand Cole's also on SmackDown, but he really lately has been taking a backseat to Kevin Patrick on SmackDown. Like, Cole speaks on very big storyline sort of driven things that points that they really want to push home on SmackDown. But otherwise, it's basically Patrick and Graves. And I really think Patrick
is the
best.
The way I think about it, Brad, if I could sneak in, with Cole on SmackDown, it's like a young quarterback having his offensive coordinator stand right next to him when he takes a snap. Like, he's just there, like, pointing, like pass to that guy. Look this way. Call this play. Move this way to avoid the sack. Like, he's sort of there to help him and steer him in commercial breaks and guide him along because they want him to be better. But he's, like, on the field with him instead of on headset. That's, like, the best I can come up with in terms of, like, why he's there. Because he is not there to, like you're describing, to be the lead guy who is the dominant voice on the show. But he is there to help Kevin Patrick's inexperience. But go ahead. I just want to sneak that in.
No, that is a great analogy. And I honestly think it's hurting SmackDown, and Kevin Patrick seems like a fantastic guy, the type of guy you'd want to hang out with and be friends with, and you know, and whatever. But and I don't want to see him lose his job, certainly not. But I just wish he would kind of go back to like backstage stuff and whatever, because I think the product is so much better with Cole and Barrett calling. It really enhances it a lot on television. One funny thing tonight that I noticed, like, I had no idea where this show was emanating from. I had no idea. I until Seth Rollins said Greenville in the third hour, I had no idea where this show was. Like, they really gave them nothing. Like, you know, normally they'll say, you know, the name of the city or, you know, Greenville, welcome to Monday Night Raw or South Carolina, nothing. So I thought that was just kind of weird. But Ian stole a lot of my thunder. I was honestly blown away by the Drew vignette. I thought it was so well done and so good. And then Seth's comeback 20 minutes later or whatever it was, I also thought was fantastic. But I know you guys did cover that and talk about that. But I just wanted to say that to me was like, those were like the two most interesting things on the show, and also Gunther's incredible ability to like just be a bully. Like how far he has come since NXT is honestly mind blowing. The confidence, I think a lot of it has to do with the weight he lost and how fit and in shape he is. But I mean, him laughing at Miz and being like, yeah, what are you going to do about it? Like, what are you going to do about it? Like, it was just so schoolyard bullyish, but like in the biggest way possible. And I just thought it was, you know, incredibly well done. And he does seem like, to me, like a gigantic mountain to climb. But it goes to my point, which was, you know, they did an event in Germany on, I think, Saturday night or whatever it was. I don't know if it was last Friday or Saturday. And Ludwig Kaiser came out, I just saw clips of it all over the place, to like a hero's entrance. Like, he had the German flag, he was smiling, people were hugging him, patting him on the back. He got like the, you know, Sami Zayn in Montreal treat. And it was very interesting to see that. And I'm wondering if, you know, I don't want to be too long, but with Miz, you know, potentially being the one to take the belt off Gunther, which I don't think is going to happen, but I think it has a somewhat percentage possibility after what we saw tonight as maybe a hero's goodbye to Miz or a crowning achievement for Miz. But I wish that that bash in Berlin was earlier because I would love to see Kaiser be the guy as a babyface to take the belt off Gunther. I was just thinking of that because I thought Kaiser was excellent tonight too, in the way that he presented everything before Gunther came out.
Yeah, I'm glad you're giving Ludwig Kaiser some praise because he's been very good. He is, I think, a rising star on the roster. I think they're looking at him as somebody they can do something with. And, you know, we talk about dissension within factions, Jeff. You know, is this a case where, some, you know, he is the one who unseats Gunther ultimately?
You know, I've heard you mention, I think at least once in the past, about the potential that Kaiser has that to be a breakout babyface from Imperium. And I don't know. I am so blinded by his smarmy unlikability. Like, he's such a good heel, and that thing he does with his tongue constantly is so infuriating. Like, I could see him having, you know, standalone success for sure. I don't see it as a babyface, and I could be completely wrong there, but he is dialed in so well on this heel persona. It's just hard for me to see.
Do you see Gunther more as a babyface than Kaiser? Like, in your mind, like, could Gunther just be that that proud, I respect wrestling, come at me? You know, Samojo's a babyface, has worked. Is that more likely? And Kaiser is the smarmy heel, in your eyes, in terms of how you would cast them,
yeah,
if you had to do it?
Gunther can certainly do that. I mean, the wrestling fans respect him and like him and boo him because they respect him so much. You know, I could, that would make some sense. I'd be disappointed if it happened too soon because he's on such a great roll right now. I mean, is there a bigger heel move than coming out and bullying an obnoxious heel to the point of making him a babyface? He's so good at what he's doing right now. I would rather them knock off the dissension for right now. And you know, I understand that Russians are not Germans, but I do think Ilya Dragunov seems custom made for Imperium. If they ever decided they wanted to get away from the Giovanni thing, he would be an excellent upgrade. You know, no offense to Giovanni, but they seem to be sour on him and have been for a while anyways. That's an outfit I would love to see.
I love that we have clarified that Germans are not Russian. I want a controversial statement here tonight. No, I know what you mean. I mean, they would have to, you know, tweak things a little bit. What was I going to say? Oh, as far as not knowing where the show was, I went back and just replayed the open of the show while we're talking here. And it's like, they did not mention Greenville. They did not have a graphic. I can't remember the last time they didn't. It's not something I paid as much attention to lately because they haven't been snobs about that like they were years ago, where if we're not in a NFL-type city, a cosmopolitan city, we're ashamed. Thank you, fans, for paying your money. We love you, but we're never going to admit that we were here. I don't believe they did the postcard shots. Now, one might say, not me, there are no postcard shots at Greenville. But I didn't say that. But they didn't do the postcard segments where they glorify where they are. And so, yeah, they did seem to be deliberately, Brad, not acknowledging where they were. And they were really just going with the Halloween theme. They did open the show a little differently than normal, so maybe that's their excuse. You know, they had the ring entrance rather than the camera panning the crowd. But I hope that's not a thing that they bring back. I think it's a feature, not a flaw, Jeff, to talk about we go everywhere. We cover all corners of America. We're not just going to big stadiums internationally in the big cities. We bring WWE to you. And to me, I would shine a lantern on that. I would not hide from it.
No, they've been really great about it recently, too. It's been part of that overall presentation thing they've been doing for the past few months that I've really enjoyed so much. And it's funny, when Brad mentioned that, I had forgotten that I did that, but I did the same thing. I was, you know, making some notes, preparing to be on here. And at one point I had to hop over to the Torch and look up your recap just to see where the show was emanating from, because I didn't know either. So I guess we all had the same problem tonight. I don't know. They have, that's something they've been a lot better about in recent months, the past year even or so. So I would like to see that continue. And, you know, I'm sure there's something nice in Greenville they could have found, a town square or something.
I just did a Google search, and I got to say, I didn't see anything that you'd want to show on television. I mean, I don't want to get people in Greenville mad at me, but, like, there's just – nothing there. No, I'm just playing into it. I'm sure there are, every town of any size that can have an arena like that has things that their people are proud of. And
I'm sure the arena itself is beautiful, right? Do an arena show.
No,
whatever.
I look it up. It's of an era. Unfortunately, no.
I'm reaching here.
I'm doing a bit, but am I? It was built in 1998. Kind of looks like it was built in 1989. It's kind of got that architectural. Okay, I'm going to stop. Yeah. I'm just riffing on Greenville. It might be a wonderful place to live. Probably not, but it might be. Okay.
Brett, wow.
I'm totally joking, everyone. Go ahead, Brett.
Wow, as a Greenville native, I am offended. I'm just kidding, bro.
Someone from Greenville, right? Please. Let me know. Send photos of what they should have included and what they should have touted about that town. I'd like to know.
Yeah.
Of all the nights to have a caller from the show.
Yeah, that's true. I did take Brett seriously.
Yeah. I wanted to say something that probably no one's ever said on the history of the post show ever. I wanted to talk about Xia Li. I think that that was kind of effective, you know, her knocking out Candice LeRae. I mean, I want your opinion on it because I'm not obviously – I don't know, like, what really works. And, like, you might have viewed that as a total, like, flub. Like, that's just never going to get over or work. But to me, it kind of made her look awesome. Like, it was more compelling than her just winning a match to me. Like, hey, like, this woman literally is so knocked out from that finisher move that she can't even continue. And if she does that again next week to, like, another woman or something along those lines where the woman just literally – you have to call off the match, I think that's kind of a cool way of getting her back in the mix. And to me, that was, like, a really interesting way of doing it. I don't think the crowd knew what was going on, but I think when you have the commentary, it works a lot better. I don't know. What did you guys think of that?
I was a little confused by it. Wrestling logic dictates that for that to be an angle, Xia Li would then be attacking Candice LeRae as she was laying on the mat afterwards being attended to. And that didn't happen. And they did the thing a little bit where the voices dropped. And so I'm wondering, did something kind of go off script for a minute? And then they cut to Candice backstage and I'm like, okay, they're really milking this thing. Okay. Everybody's fine. But what is the point? And the only thing there could be to serve at that point would be to put Xia Li over. So, yeah, I thought that was surprising. I didn't see the match going that way. I thought, if nothing else, she would get involved with Indy Hartwell maybe a little bit afterwards. But I guess we'll see where it goes for next week.
I don't have anything to add to what you said. I do want to take a moment, not to extend this bit too much, but I did look up what it's like to live in Greenville. And John Behrens, B-E-R-E-N-S, on Quora says, I have lived in many places in America, and 2 years ago I moved to Greenville from the beautiful Swamp Rabbit Trail, which is a great name if you're going to lead with the best place to be in a state, Swamp Rabbit Trail. But it sounds cool. 30 miles of paved trail along the Reedy River to the vibrant arts community, the exceptional energy-filled downtown with the great restaurants, gallery shops, and businesses. It's one of the best small towns in America. It has a minor league baseball team, international businesses, BMW, Michelin, and 5 colleges in the surrounding area. It's affordable, well-rounded, and beautiful. I feel like any damage I did, I've offset by reading that. So I just wanted to sneak that in. All right, Brad, back to you.
And my very last thing, I'll let you go, but, you know, I just looked it up, too. As a Minnesota person, you will appreciate this, Wade. You know who's from Greenville? Kevin Garnett. The Timberwolves, great. So, thought you might find that interesting.
There you go. He's more known for being from Chicago, but yeah, originally there before he went to the
show. Born in Greenville. Born in Greenville.
Yep. But then
Greenville's got more going on than we thought.
Chicago when he turned out to be a basketball prodigy. But I mean, most famous person. Got it. Yeah.
Jesse Jackson too. I saw. There were some others also, but whatever. Oh. Hey guys, have a great night. You know, I did think Raw was really, really good tonight. And again, that Drew thing, I'd love to hear you guys talk even more about it because I did think that was a great vignette, but maybe we're beating a dead horse. Yeah. But have a good evening, and thank you so much.
I love the positive energy, Brad. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, the Drew piece is great. I mean, if Drew doesn't re-sign with WWE, this stretch is making him way more valuable to AEW. No matter what they do, I mean, this is a cool, stand-up, badass, like, he's not being a sports entertainer-y guy like he was for a while after the pandemic. His stock is up. His stock is up for me watching him now. I'm like, you can build a wrestling company or a wrestling show around him, this version of him.
I will say I went the first nearly 2 hours of the show wondering when Drew was going to be on, and it wasn't until the very end of the show that I realized we didn't have Cody at all tonight. So I don't know what that says, but when Drew's not on, he's missed. So I was really looking forward to that, and yeah, the video package was a nice payoff.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, our number 347-215-8558. Don't know how much longer we'll go here, but we'll see. We'll go to Joe in Albany, New York next. Joe, have you ever been to Greenville? Any good memories of Greenville, South Carolina?
I have. You know what? I heard you guys. I have never been to Greenville. I've gone to North Carolina, but never South Carolina. But no, it sounds great. I would go to Greenville. No issues with it.
Yeah. Well, it's located between Atlanta, Georgia, and Charlotte. So that's like, you know, it's easy driving. Cost of living is below the national and state averages. The job market's strong, expected to keep growing. Now, I don't know if this is a bragging point or not, but the schools are in the top 10 for the state. And I'm like, I would think so. I mean, it's not the biggest state in the world. How many school districts are there? But it's top 10. I mean, it's better than bottom 10, although maybe there's only 12. I don't know. But crime rates are higher. Crime rates are higher than average.
Crime rates are higher. Greenville is okay. That's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. We don't like that.
Yeah, housing costs are below the national average, and it has a growing foodie paradise with a thriving farm-to-table scene. But it also has low racial diversity, which, by the way, is in the con list, just for those of you listening. And multiple art festivals and museums with mild winters, which around now sounds good, green space galore, and a walkable downtown. So I honestly, if you could put me in a – I'd love to get in an EV and just, like, my job allowed for it, and just drive and visit towns, like, and bring my bikes, like, and go biking. Like, I'd love to just – I love going to Waterloo for the Wrestling Hall of Fame and, like, Waterloo, Iowa. I love driving there. It's like I like exploring old downtowns and seeing what people in a community are proud of. So it sounds like I'm doing a bit here, but, like, I genuinely am curious about the city, and I also want to shame WWE a little bit for being snobs about it because, frankly, I think they could have done a really nice – from looking online here, and a really nice thing about here's postcard shots of Greenville. We're proud to be here. It's centered between these three major cities, and here's what they're known for. And here's what you know Dominic did to irritate someone while he was out and about today in the afternoon. All right, go ahead, John.
No,
I love that. I almost now want to see you get into like a Winnebago or like a camper or something, and just travel broadcast from the road as you travel to Greenville. You know, like you'll do all your podcasts. Tell us where you're at, how you watched.
Yeah. I'm tempted. I'm tempted. Maybe when my son's out of high school, I'll feel a little right. Tied down.
You know, each summer for the past few years,
you're an empty nest there, right?
My family has been doing road trips for the last few summers, and I'm looking at the map right now, and not this past year, but the year before, we drove at one point from Knoxville down to Atlanta and then over to Columbia. And I'm looking at this map. We did a wide circle right around Greenville.
You avoided it on purpose. Let's disclose why you did that.
Wow. Inadvertently on purpose.
Right around
your GPS just steered you away from it.
Yeah.
That's funny. All right, Joe, we're getting loopy like Michael Cole tonight. Go ahead.
Yeah. All right. Well, I will say I agree with Brad. I thought tonight was a great show, actually. I would put it in the great column. I think that they're really the WWE, especially whoever is behind the creative of Raw, I think they're doing a really good job of kind of finding the groove of the show, if you know what I mean. I've been in PR for about 8 years, but before this, before my job now, I worked in TV news as a producer and, you know, did a bear of a morning show, 3 hours, which is pretty much like the same show repeated. But, you know, you have new viewers in each hour. So you're trying to, my point is putting together a show that long is difficult. Even if you're repeating crap. So I think that I can see almost an effort, I don't know if you guys see it too, of trying to make the show move faster. One thing I see them doing that I think is working is the video packages. You know, it helps if they're really good, you know, but just some of those, even the shorter vignettes where they just kind of give us an idea of who's coming up if we haven't seen them before, I think is really good. I mean, we've talked about I've heard you guys anyway talk about the thing. I think that was, probably the best thing on the show. I really liked Seth's comeback. You know, although I think Drew, made the better, I don't know if it was a better point, was the more real, you know. I think that as far as comebacks go, you know, like Cry Me a River, although he felt kind of like an a-hole, watch my language on your show.
Thank you. Let's push it.
No problem. But but although kind of coming across as like a jerk, I feel like I feel like that's a good comeback, you know, because that's what I feel like you'd say to that, you know. Hey, you won the championship, you know, too bad you did it in front of the whole world was suffering during that time. So stop complaining about it. You know, again, I'm more Team Drew in the argument, but I feel like as far as comebacks go, that's the best you can get. Creed Brothers. That's kind of what I wanted to ask you guys about.
I really
liked their debut tonight. I thought, and I think it kind of speaks to also, you know, just the way that WWE, another thing that I like they're doing, I can't believe I'm so complimentary of WWE. It's been a while. But how they're kind of peppering in the NXT call-ups, you know, it's not somebody showing up out of the blue in a completely different gimmick with a completely different name. You know, these are people that are keeping their name and they're peppered in better, I think. You know, Dragon Lee, Tiffany Stratton, J.D. McDonough, just a couple examples. But I really liked what they did with the Creed Brothers tonight. I think the Alpha Academy was the best choice for opponents. The match might have started off, I think it might have started off a little wonky, but thought it got really, really, really good. But here's my question. Do you think we do get back to Chad Gable versus Gunther? Because remember, we had Chad Gable, you know, swear to God that he's going to, you know, and to his family and to his daughter who's crying and to, you know, basically say, come hell or high water, no matter what, I'm going to take that title from Gunther. Do you think they're getting away from that? Do you think there's a way to come back to that? Not that I hate what happened tonight, because I like the Alpha Academy as a unit, but I just wonder what you think about that. Do you think they've given up on that?
What do you think,
John? Chad has not gotten away from that. Like I mentioned before, that's something he brings up once every 2 or 3 weeks. And it's usually at a point where you're kind of thinking, you know, he's getting slapped by Otis backstage and you know, doing his bit. And then out of nowhere, he mentions like, yeah, you know, I haven't forgot about Gunther. And I like that. I like that a lot. And I do think he seems, you know, like a possibility. I don't know if anybody's feels like a guarantee right now as far as who's going to be the one to take the title from Gunther. But I would put him towards the top of the list for sure. I also liked the Creed Brothers debut. And I found myself thinking during that match that it'd be kind of cool to see, you know, those two indoctrinated into Alpha Academy. I mean, you'd be talking a pretty big faction there, of course, but maybe Otis can go his own way. Maybe we can stop doing this thing we're doing with Akira Tozawa and make Alpha Academy a more serious faction. And that would definitely be a way to do that. And I can see Chad Gable flanked by the Creed brothers heading into one final match with Gunther, who's got Imperium by his side, and that could be a heck of a program. I don't know that we're headed that way with the Creed brothers, but that could be very cool.
It's a good idea.
Yeah. I thought Creed brothers look good. I like Michael Cole talking about them as individuals and comparing them to the Steiners and the Road Warriors, not the Legion of Doom. And they look good. And I like Gable and Otis raising their arms after the match. So that was all good. Gable and Gunther, I feel like they planted a seed. They may or may not have a specific plan in mind. I don't think they're letting him say that without the intent of circling back at some point to do something with it. But frankly, I came out of Gable's singles run going, I will always enjoy his singles matches, but I don't think overall he's a single star. And I think he's better, you know, in a tag team. And he's a really good tag team wrestler. Some people just are, whether it's Jason Jordan or Otis or whatever. I don't really want to see him in a big centerpiece feud. I think there's other people who have better personalities and overall auras, to invest TV time in as singles wrestlers. So, you know, if he gets another match, I don't think he should be the one to end the reign. Joe, what else?
Yeah. I agree with that. I do. It just sucks because I think that the way, you know, in true babyface fashion, the way he built that up, the way he promised, the way he said that was so impassioned, which was several weeks ago now. So it's kind of maybe lost a little bit of its luster, but it really did make me think like, wow, they're going to pull the trigger with him one day. And they still might, who knows. The Miz, I heard you guys talking about that just real quick on that. I do think they may be turning the Miz face. You know, I think they're just slow rolling it. You know, like they're kind of like they're doing with Drew. And I like that too. That it's less, I mean, we've seen it before where it's, heel one week, face the next week, you know, and nobody explains anything and it just sort of is. And I think that maybe, you know, this is kind of the slow progression of the Miz. Because, I mean, clearly during the whole Miz TV, he was clearly the babyface in that ring. You know, I hear you with the backstage segment, but I think that they're probably just, you know, taking it a little bit slow, which I don't necessarily think is a bad thing. One more thing before I head out. Lots of rumors. I don't know how much you guys fantasy book, but lots of rumors that Randy Orton might be returning soon. Who do you, when Randy comes back, see, I always thought that when Randy Orton came back, it would be with Matt Riddle. We all saw what happened there. And I'm not sure that wasn't maybe a plan. Because remember when Riddle was losing a lot and it was, you know, there was a lot of, you know, rumor, conjecture online about, oh, he's being punished for this. And maybe that's true. I mean, we saw what happened. So maybe that was true. But I thought that they were making him lose a lot because they were setting up a big triumphant return of that tag team, RK-Bro. What do you guys think, now that he's gone, what would you do, or what are your thoughts on what they should do when Randy Orton does come back, if he does come back?
Jeff, what do you think?
I don't think the fans want to boo him right now, so I can't see him coming back in any kind of heel role. I think maybe a program with Drew would go really nicely.
That's what I would say.
You know, the two friends of Riddle, right?
Yeah, really.
Other than that, I don't know. I could see him involved. You know, you say maybe Seth Rollins, but I don't know. That doesn't make a lot of sense. Drew would be kind of the ideal candidate. Maybe you get him in there doing something with Gunther. But I don't know. We're assuming he's on Raw. Is that a fact? I don't even.
It doesn't have to be. I mean, when someone's gone for a long time, I sort of think they have creative license to just drop them wherever or do a, you know, quote, even trade again. I mean, if they felt they had a program on SmackDown that really worked, they could. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I'm curious when he comes back if he's like, I'm feeling better than I ever have. Let's just go into high gear and do a major push. Or if he's like, all right, I want to be careful. I don't want to go through this again. I want to be a legacy star, but I'm kind of picking my spots. I mean, he's been very particular about what he'll do in the ring for years because of his list of injuries. I wish I like had something where I'm like, I'm really excited to see this. Maybe Gunther just, you know, and Orton loses, you know, that's part of Gunther's journey of establishing himself. Even more so is going over Randy. Beating Randy Orton, who comes back and makes a case for that. But I don't know that I have anything that just jumps out as I need to see that. I'm wondering if they would put him in a team too. Like if he's if he's thinking, I want to work tag matches, not singles, to preserve myself. You know, tag team, you know, the Riddle thing was kind of fun. Is there somebody that would make sense for him to team with? You know, Sami Zayn, now that KO is gone, or something like that.
Yeah, was his run with Riddle more about that, him wanting to slow it down and be part of a team, or was it more that he genuinely just enjoyed hanging out with Matt Riddle? Because I know that came together somewhat organically, I believe.
Yeah, I think it's turned into something longer than they planned because it just worked.
Right, yeah. But they were just so different too. You know, I don't think you get that kind of chemistry between Randy Orton, particularly, and you know, just random, you know, Sami Zayn, for example.
Right. Yeah.
So it would have to be kind of a special case.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on that, Joe?
I thought those were all great points. I really don't have much else. I'm excited to see Randy back. I don't know. There've been, you know, people saying maybe he goes right to the top and goes after Roman. I don't necessarily need to see that. I think that would be, Randy's always been one of my favorites. So I figured I'd just ask you guys what you thought. One last thing. I love what they're doing with Cody Rhodes. I think they continue to do the right thing with him week after week. Tonight, his, you know, being the savior, hobbling down to the to the ring to, like, you know, get vengeance on his. I loved it, and I love what they're doing with Cody. Thanks guys for the time and Wade, get better.
Thanks.
I'll see you in Greenville.
Yes, I'll do a live podcast from somewhere there. All right, thanks, Joe, appreciate it.
Hey, maybe Drew is the reinforcement that Damian Priest brings in after he gets booted from Judgment Day. And that could kind of tie him into a feud with Drew if that's the way everything plays out.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Jeff, what else is in your notes that you want to bring up? I'm going to try not to push my voice too much harder here.
Yeah, I really loved all the video packages tonight. I know they've been doing that more lately, but it really seemed to be an overdrive tonight, just not only with all the competitors in the women's five-way match, but there were others too. They did Candice LeRae, the DIY. We just got a lot of that. And it's just so good for developing character. I was just really happy to see that. And, you know, I think I came into this with the whole holiday spin kind of souring my opinion on the show a little. And the more callers we're getting talking about the finer points of the show, yeah, the more I'm getting on board. I'm like, okay, yeah, that was a pretty good episode, wasn't it? just needed to get past all the pumpkins, I think. I thought it was really telling that following the week she had last week, that Rhea Ripley was the first face to come out of the entranceway when the show kicked off. You know, you have Judgment Day's music, and who comes out? She's the first one, and she's running the show. I really like the confidence they seem to have in her right now. And I mentioned this in my Rocket Straps article last week, but they seem to have something really big cooking with her that we haven't quite touched on just yet. I don't think it's just going to be a matter of, you know, Drew McIntyre joins Judgment Day and Rhea Ripley falls to the background. I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion that Drew joins either, just as an example. I think we're looking at getting a lot of Rhea Ripley in the future. I think they flirted with the idea of, you know, the tribal chief. They were referring to her somewhat tongue in cheek as a few weeks back. And that was the first time in a while I've been watching an episode of Raw or SmackDown and, you know, audibly gasped a little bit when I heard it, when she, I think she told Paul Heyman to acknowledge her. I was like, wow, you know, they're letting her run with these lines. And that's really great to see. So the fact they've got her in such a prominent role leading off the show like this now, I think is really cool. So I continue to be interested in seeing where they go with her. I really enjoyed seeing Jay and Sammy backstage. I think it's a funny thing. There's no two wrestlers on WWE programming that I enjoy seeing hang out side by side more than Sammy and Jay. I think it was such a long road that we were on with them that when they're finally able to put all the past behind and just hang out like a couple of guys. And it's just, they seem to really enjoy doing it. It's fun to see. I hope we don't have any kind of, you know, unforeseen Sammy heel turn or anything anytime in the next year or so, because I enjoy whatever they're able to get out of the two of them. I think Jay brings more life into Sammy than what he had for the first few months he was over on Raw with Kevin Owens and trying to find his footing there. I think there seems to be more to him once again, and a lot of that has to do with Jay.
I wonder what some people – like, I wonder if Sammy would have felt comfortable with Vince McMahon as his boss railing against people who think that all that matters is power. And as long as you're chasing power, you can do whatever you want and do so ruthlessly. That's ruthless aggression. Ruthlessly. And oppress anyone as long as it's in the name of power. And then he said, you know, his name isn't Sami Zayn. It's Rebellion and Resistance. He was emphatic, you know, saying he'll fight as long as there's a breath in his body. I mean, I'm trying to, like, decide, is that worth reading into? Is this about world events, or is this just him establishing his character opposite of Judgment Day, and he has, you know, it's happenstance, or is it a plausible deniability but a message? Did that jump out to you?
It was intense, and I did have a moment where I was just thinking, like, we're still talking about wrestling and
meeting
with Judgment Day, right?
Yeah.
It almost felt like he had gone off track a little bit. Not any bad way, because there was a lot of fire there, and that's always fun to see, especially from him.
And I'm like nodding along. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are on their last moments on Earth who got a lot of money, a lot of power, but didn't get a lot of joy and a lot of peace, and don't probably, you know, once they realize how fleeting that money and power is, and spending their whole life chasing it and missing out on just those little moments, you know, taking their dog for a walk or enjoying a conversation with a neighbor and slowing down enough to be there for your family as they age or when they're young. It's just like, for whatever we're here on this planet for, like, to me, that anonymity, but the value of those small moments. You're talking about traveling, you know, with your family in the summer. It's like, I literally feel bad for okay, I don't get too philosophical here, but I also don't want to say I feel bad, but I feel pity for people who spend their whole life obsessed with having people they will never meet know their name and fearing them because of some power, or needlessly being jealous of them because of how many rooms in the house that they'll never spend time in, that the maids spend more time in than they do. But hey, they have the rooms, so that means they're a success. Like, I kind of pity people who are driven in that way in this world. Like, just find something you love, but find balance and do more good than bad. And I'm listening to Sammy talk like this, and I'm like, is that what he's talking about? Like, is he talking about, like, don't just think that all that matters is power. And if you're chasing power, even if it's through ruthlessness and oppressing people, everything is in the name of power. I was like, yay, okay, but like you're saying, Jeff, like, wait, is this a wrestling show or a political speech or a protest against, you know, things going on in the world? I mean, I like that, but it felt like, where is this going?
Where does the character go from there? Yeah, I felt in a way like Sammy kind of redefined his relationship with the Judgment Day to a degree there. Like, you know, a lot of folks have been complaining about the never-ending feuds that all the faces of Raw are having with Judgment Day, and that didn't change that, of course, but it definitely seemed to refresh it a little bit, at least for Sammy. So I don't know. I assume we've got a couple more months of Sammy versus Judgment Day in various forms. So, yeah, I mean, if bringing the fire is what...
It's consistent with the storyline, which is Judgment Day want to run the place. We're the people who run the place. Like, so when he goes, oh, you're just in pursuit of power, no matter what you have to do, if you're ruthless and oppressing people, you know, it does fit enough for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But it also felt larger than that. Like, stuff was pent up in Sammy, and he was inspired by something larger that is a philosophy he lives by. And it just fit the story he's in, but it came out with this extra passion because of it. And it was interesting. It was memorable. It was notable. It's something to build on. And it's different than you know, the Sammy that was insecurely trying to become accepted in the bloodline. Like, this is, this feels probably closer to who Sammy is in real life. I don't think it's just, you know, a storyline promo that he delivered well. So yeah, it's just, it's interesting in that, in the context that it was presented and in contrast to who he was, you know, a year and a half ago.
Sure. And I was a little worried when you started going on there that we were working our way towards an apology to Greenville, and I'm glad that did not happen.
I think I've done enough for Greenville. tore him down and built him up. The Cody promo at the end was interesting, you know, too. And that was referenced just, you know, just poking and, you know, I'm trying to think of the specific thing that jumped out to me, but just, you know, Cody at the end, you know, a fierce and determined baby face promo from a guy who runs out for the save. Again, it sounded like Cody might've had a cold. So maybe we're in good company with that, but he got it out, even if his voice seemed maybe a little bit less powerful than normal. He was working hard to make up for that. And I like Cody hobbling out. I thought last week was fine. I understood some people thinking it's getting a little too much, and it's, you know, a little ridiculous. And boy, but I, like I said last week, I think they're just walking up to that line, but not fully crossing it. And if they keep doing that, I think it'll work. If they cross the line, there'll be a backlash. But I don't think they are with Cody. I don't think they're crossing the line. They are right up against it, though, in terms of being a little too much. But, you know, if a couple people think it's too much, but most people are cheering him still, then I think it's fine. It's sound judgment.
And their usage of him continues to be extremely measured, you know, just having him out there for the final 4 minutes or so of the show, as opposed to having his face all over the beginning, middle, and end of the show, as they have with him at different times, you know, leading up to WrestleMania last year. He was constantly all over the show. And I think they seem to know, like, this is where we're going with him. Let's not push it, you know, because they don't want to have that backlash. And so I think, yeah, in that regard, they're doing a really good job.
And he got good lines in. You know, you are a walk behind person, a walk behinder. You know, you walk behind Rhea, walk behind Balor, and even Dominic. Like, the way he said it, it's really good, you know. I mean, if you're making fun of Dominic, you're going to get cheered. You know what I mean? Because people, like, love booing Dominic right now. So, yeah, I thought he had some good lines and some good delivery. So it was bookended by, you know, impassioned babyface promos. And that's, you know, a big part of what I like about wrestling. And it's one of my frustrations with Roman Reigns, you know, as a babyface. He didn't have that in his toolbox. And I'm a fan of babyfaces who are genuinely likable, saying things that I admire or I think are, you know, just good philosophy or are undercutting a heel and making fun, you know, chopping egos down. And that's what Sammy and especially Cody did tonight.
It would have been really interesting to see the big dog persona of Roman Reigns in this current era of WWE. Yeah. I think maybe we would not have all grown to, you know, well, grown as much as we did back then with him. But
there's something about the earnestness of Cody and Sammy and their vulnerabilities, you know, Sammy especially, but even Cody, you know, with his life journey and coming up short. But I just think, like, that works for their era. And I don't think Roman coming out through the crowd with a vest on and the heavy boom, boom, boom music and with scripted lines being, I don't know, it felt corporately produced and inauthentic. And I think there's an authenticity to Cody and Sammy, even if there's flaws, even if Cody can be a little too much and unself-aware and a little whatever, you know, like a little too much, a little too Cody-ish sometimes. There's a vulnerability and an authenticity to his heroic nature and his aspirations and he's driven, but with a cause that within the world of WWE is totally justified, which is he wants to be immortal. He wants to win a world title. That's what everyone should be there for. I think that works. Roman could never lower himself to act like he cared that much about fans cheering him or about having a cause or winning the title. It just felt like he was, you know, he was wearing clothes that didn't fit his personality. And so I think it would have had to been a completely different Roman babyface act to work even in this era.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say with Cody too, I'm glad they've kind of stepped back from that kind of the spokesperson for the brand. Like, he would come out and, you know, thank Michael Cole and then welcome everybody and stand out in the audience and do his interview. I'm glad they seem to be getting away from that too.
I will say, when he says, "Priest, you came within a whisper of immortality with a briefcase," it felt a little corporate. Like, this, you know, the immortality phrase about, because I mean, it's good business, you know, to say, hey, you're immortal if you win the world title. I mean, you want to position your world title as a big deal. But it is sort of corporate speak pushing the limits. And then Cody is saying those words. It is dialed back from, yeah, the John Cena and even Drew during, I think it worked with Drew during the pandemic. But, you know, that spokesman for the company saying, I don't think they want. Cody should be about himself, you know, not just about the company. But that language, I cringed a little when he said that.
Not to mention just the overall awkwardness of him, you know, talking about, oh, you know, if you would basically saying if you had taken the title from Seth, you'd be immortal. But at the same time, I'm not really interested in that title because I'm kind of focusing on Roman Reigns in a few months. So you go ahead and get that one. Go be immortal. You know?
Yeah, that's funny. Anything else, Jeff?
No, I think we've covered all the important things. You know, I've got some notes about Akira Tozawa and Nikki Cross, but nothing.
Oh, come on. Mention both of them. Especially
what are we doing? What are we
that.
Doing with Tozawa? I mean, the whole presentation feels so very Vince right now. And I try to give the current regime the benefit of the doubt with such things, but given their long history of portraying particularly Asian and Asian American wrestlers as being children, you know, when you send an accomplished pro like Tozawa out there in a grossly oversized t-shirt, it doesn't help to sway me. You know, he's not being quite as goofy as maybe he would be in a Vince era, but it's not, we don't need whatever it is they're doing there. And I wish we could just kind of move on from it. Nikki Cross, I like that we have the psychotic version of her back. She's so sedate right now. Is she going to do something? Like, she's really, it's menacing, but how many weeks are we going to go before she actually, you know, moves or does anything?
I don't know, but I this is the side of the Nikki Cross character I like. I mean, yeah. her headless head on a table with Michael Cole going, I saw her nose twitch, so it is her. She's alive. I mean, I thought it's, you know, just cartoonishly Halloween. You don't want to be too gruesome when it comes to that. But obviously she was sticking her head up through a hole in the table, but pretending to not, you know, to not, and just have to sit there and not move her blink for that long with the camera on you. I don't know. I get it. I got to get out of that.
I get it. I'm just ready for her to start putting it into action, you know? She was so scary that Chelsea Green inadvertently dropped a pumpkin on her head, which, gosh, that match. I will say, as much as I loved Piper Niven, and we could talk about her a little more, I only wish Chelsea could have leaned into the Hitman gimmick a bit more, too. She, you know, the hair was great. I would have liked some of the mannerisms. I would have liked maybe she put her sunglasses on a fan. That would have been awesome. But
and then taking it away.
Oh, yeah.
Like, lean in, I'm going to give it to you. Oh, no, I'm going to keep it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I do continue to enjoy both of them. They're both great with what they're doing right now, her and Piper Niven. I only wonder what's going to happen to Sonya Deville when she comes back.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, I kind of wonder, you know.
I could deal with Green and Niven just coming out cosplaying the Heart Foundation for like a month.
Absolutely.
That and there was more that they could have done. You're definitely right. Although I did enjoy Niven's laughing like Neidhart.
Oh, she's so good.
As a kid, I'd go to the Marriott Hotel after the WWF house shows at the Met Sports Center in the 80s, and it was a peak era of the Hart Foundation. And I'm so happy I got to see them, you know, against British Bulldogs and Valentine and Beefcake, and I mean it was just like peak era Hart Foundation matches. And Neidhart would sit at the bar, believe it or not, after the matches, and people would like linger in the hallways of the hotel, and this is where this is some of my favorite wrestling memories, are just being up close, seeing Andre the Giant check into a hotel. Like, you know, it's just awesome. And Neidhart would just, people, can we have your autograph? Can we have your autograph? And Neidhart would sit at the table in the bar and just laugh at the people, like the kids who I wasn't old enough to get into the bar, but you could stand outside and watch the wrestlers mingle and do their thing. And Neidhart would just sit there with his feet back and just laugh at people wanting his autograph. Just like totally, I wouldn't say playing up the gimmick. It just was who he was. He was great. You know, he didn't sort of break character. It was who he was, and he just laughed at people wanting his autograph and wouldn't give fans the time of day. And it was sort of a bit. You know, I think people were kind of done, you know, that he would not like drive you off the road. You know, he wasn't like a bad dude. He just was, I'm not giving you an autograph.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying a drink. And so I get to see Jim just, you know, with his guard down a little bit, just doing his thing with the camera not on, and that was fun. There's a lot that Niven could be doing to play up.
She clearly spent a little bit of time studying him. She really had him down. You know, she had the laugh down. She had the beard stroke down. I was really happy that the facial hair did not fall off while she was in battle.
Yes, totally.
Great.
All right, that's a great line to end on. Yes.
Perfect.
Thanks, Jeff.
All right, thank you, Wade.
I'll see how much my throat swells up once the Advil wears off.
Yeah, good luck. Hope you feel better.
Thank you. Yeah, hopefully it's not too bad. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll talk to you all next time.